Columbia Workshop.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight the Columbia Workshop presents the eighth program of a series devoted to experimental radio. Your letters on last week's program, in which we dramatized Jonathan Swift's A Voyage to Brobdingnag from Gulliver's Travels, were very interesting and welcome. Thank you. Tonight, the workshop is proud to turn over its resources to Orson Welles. Some months ago, Mr. Welles produced Shakespeare's Macbeth for the Federal Theater. It was received with the most enthusiastic response accorded Shakespearean production in years. He is now busily engaged rehearsing for one of the leading roles in Sidney Kingsley's new play, 10 Million Goats, and also producing his own version of a French farce called Horse Eats Hat. Between both rehearsals, he has managed to write a book called Everybody Shakespeare. We have asked Mr. Welles to arrange and produce Shakespeare's Hamlet for the workshop. He will also play the leading role. But first, a word from Mr. Welles.
In deciding to present an abbreviated version of Hamlet, the Columbia Workshop found itself facing a considerable dilemma. Would it be feasible, we wondered, to give merely the plot in our short space of time, or should we concentrate on certain well-known passages and let the story proceed confusingly? Our final decision was this: to present to you the first two acts of the play, retaining, whenever possible, the most notable scenes in their entirety, and giving you, we hope, a clear, dramatic statement of the causes of Hamlet's tragedy.
Hamlet by William Shakespeare.
It is midnight, and before the castle of Elsinore, a sentry stands at his door.
Long live the king!
Bernardo! You come most carefully upon your hour.
It's now struck 12. Get me to bed, Francisco.
This will need much thanks. It's bitter cold, and I am sick at heart.
Have you had quiet guard?
Not about stirring.
Well, good night. If you do meet Horatio and Marcellus, the rivals of my watch, bid them make haste.
I think I hear them.
Stand ho! Who's there?
Friends to the crown.
And liegemen to the dame.
Welcome, Horatio. Welcome, good Marcellus.
What has this thing appeared again tonight?
I have seen nothing.
Horatio says it is our fantasy, and will not let belief take hold of him touching this dreaded sight, twice seen of us. Therefore, I have entreated him along with us to watch the minutes of this night, that if again this apparition comes, he may approve our eyes and speak to it.
Thanks, I swear out of here.
Sit down a while, and let us once again clear your ears that are so fortified against our story, what we have two nights seen.
Well, sit we down, and let us hear Bernardo speak of this.
Last night of all, when yon faint star that's westward from the pole had made his course to illume that heart of heaven where now it burns, Marcellus and myself...
Please, speak me off! Look, where it comes again.
In the same figure, like the
king.
Dead.
Shall I strike at it with my partisan?
No, it will not stand.
It's here!
It's here!
Wrong, being so majestical, to offer its show of violence.
It was about to speak when the cock crew.
And then it started, like a guilty thing upon a fearful summons. But look, the morn, in russet mantle clad, walks o'er the dew of yon high eastward hill. Break we our worship, and by my advice, let us impart what we have seen tonight unto young Hamlet. For upon my life, this spirit, dumb to us, will speak to him.
In the great hall of the castle, the court is assembled. Hamlet, a sober figure in black, stands apart from the rest. On a dais sits the king with his newly wedded queen. Suddenly, a trumpet blares forth. And the king rises.
So yet of Hamlet our dear brother's death the memory be green, and let it us be fitted to bear our hearts in grief, and our whole kingdom to be contracted in one brow of woe. Yet so far hath discretion fought with nature, that we with wisest sorrow think on him, together with remembrance of ourselves. Therefore, our sometime sister, now our queen, the imperial jointress to this warlike state, have we, as 'twere with a defeated joy, with one auspicious and one dropping eye, taken to wife. Nor have we here embarred your better wisdoms, which have freely gone with this affair along, for all our thanks. But now, my cousin Hamlet and my son,
a little more than kin, and less than kind
How is it that the clouds still hang on you?
Not so, my lord. I'm too much in the sun.
Good Hamlet, cast thy nighted color off. Let thine eye look like a friend on Denmark. Do not forever with thy veiled lids seek for thy noble father in the dust. Thou knowest his common. All that live must die, passing through nature to eternity.
Aye, madam. It is common.
If it be, why seems it so particular with thee?
Seems, madam. Nay, it is. I know not seems. 'Tis not alone my inky cloak, good mother, together with all forms, shows, shapes of grief that can denote me truly. These indeed seem, for they are actions that a man might play. But I have that within which passeth show. These were the trappings and the suits of woe.
'Tis sweet and commendable in your nature, Hamlet, to give these mourning duties to your father. But you must know your father lost a father, that father lost his, and the survivor bound in filial obligation for some term to do obsequious sorrow. But to persever in obstinate condolement is a course of impious stubbornness. For your intent in going back to school in Wittenberg, it is most retrograde to our desire. And we beseech you, bend you to remain here in the cheer and comfort of our eye, our chiefest courtier, cousin, and our son.
Let not thy mother lose her prayers, Hamlet. I pray thee, stay with us. Go not to Wittenberg.
I shall in all my best obey you, madam.
Why, 'tis a loving and a fair reply. Be as ourself in Denmark. Madam, come, this gentle and unforced accord of Hamlet's is smiling to my heart. Come away.
But this too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew. Now that the everlasting had not fixed his canon against self-slaughter. Oh, God. How weary, still, flat, and unprofitable seem to me all the uses of this world. Fie on it.
Fie.
'Tis an unweeded garden that grows to seed. Things rank and gross in nature possess it merely. That it should come to this. But 2 months dead, nay, not so much, not two. So excellent a king that was to this Hyperion to a satyr. So loving to my mother that he might not beteem the winds of heaven visit her face too roughly. Heaven and earth must I remember. Why, she would hang on him as if increase of appetite had grown by what it fed on. And yet within a month, a little month or ere those shoes were old with which he followed my poor father's body, like Niobe, all tears. Why, she, even she, that God, beast that wants discourse of reason would have mourned longer. Married with my uncle, my father's brother, but no more like my father than I to Hercules. Within a month, ere yet the salt of those most unrighteous tears that left the flushing in her galled eyes, she married. Ah, what wicked speed! To post with such dexterity to incestuous sheets. It is not, or it cannot come to good. But break my heart, for I must hold my tongue. I am glad to see you well. Horatio, or I do forget myself.
The same, my lord. And your poor servant, ever.
Sir, my good friend, I'll change that name with you. And what make you from Wittenberg, Horatio? Oh, Marcellus.
My good lord.
Bernardo, I'm very glad to see you. Good evening, sir. But what in faith make you from Wittenberg?
My lord, I came to see your father's funeral.
I pray thee do not mock me, fellow student. I think it was to see my mother's wedding.
Indeed, my lord, it followed hard upon.
Thrift! Thrift, Horatio, the funeral baked meats did coldly furnish forth the marriage tables. Would I had met my dearest foe in heaven, or ere I'd seen that day, Horatio. My father. Methinks I see my father.
Oh, where, my lord?
In my mind's eye, Horatio.
I saw him once. He was a goodly king.
He was a man. Taken for all in all. I shall not look upon his like again.
My lord, I think I saw him yesternight.
Saw who?
The Lord, the King, your father.
The King, my father?
Two knights together. That these gentlemen, Marcellus and Bernardo, on their watch, in the dead vast and middle of the night, being thus encountered. A figure like your father, armed at point exactly cap-a-pie, appears before them, and with solemn march goes slow and stately by them. This to me, in dreadful secrecy, in part they did, and I, with them, the third night kept the watch, where, as they had delivered, both in time, form of the thing, each word made true and good, the apparition comes. I knew your father. These hands are not more like.
But where was this?
Lord, upon the platform where we watched.
It's very strange.
Indeed, my honored lord, it's true.
Indeed, sir, it troubles me. Hold you the watch tonight.
We do, my lord.
Arm, say you.
Arm, my lord.
From top to toe.
My lord, from head to foot.
I will watch tonight. Perchance to walk again.
I warrant it will.
If it assume my noble father's person, I'll speak to it, though hell itself should gape and bid me hold my peace. So fare you well at once. Upon the platform, twixt 11 and 12, I'll visit you.
Our duty to your honor.
My father's spirit in arms. All is not well. I doubt some foul play. Would the night were come. Till then, sit still, my soul. Foul deeds will rise, though all the earth o'erwhelm them to men's eyes. The air by Trudy. It's very cold.
A nipping and an eager air.
What honor?
I think it lacks of 12.
Oh, no, it is struck.
Indeed? I heard it not. Then draws near the season wherein the spirit tells his wont to walk. What did this mean, my lord?
Oh, the king doth wake tonight and takes his rouse, and as he drains his draught of Rhenish down the kettle drum and trumpet doth bray out the triumph of his pledge.
It's the custom.
Aye, it is. But to my mind, though I'm native here and to the manner born, it is a custom more honored and a breach than the observance.
Look, my lord, it comes.
Angels and ministers of grace, defend us. Be thou a spirit of health or God and damned. Thou comest in such a questionable shape that I will speak to thee. I call thee Hamlet, king, father, royal Dane. No, answer me. Let me not burst in ignorance, but tell why thy canonized bones, hurted in death, have burst their cerements. Why the sepulchre wherein we saw thee quietly inurned hath oped his ponderous and marble jaws to cast thee up again. What may this mean? Say, why is this? Wherefore? What should we do?
Wave you to a more removed ground. But do not go with it.
No, by no means will I speak. Then I will follow it.
Do not, my lord.
Why, what should be the fear? I do not set my life at a pin, see? It waves me forth again. I'll follow it.
You shall not go, my lord.
Hold up your hand.
Hey, rule, you shall not go.
My face cries out and makes each petty artery in this body as hardy as the Nemean lions and nerves. Still am I called. Unhand me, gentlemen. By heaven, I'll make a ghost of him that lets me. I say away. Go on. I'll follow thee.
Further would thou lead me? Speak. I go no further.
Not me.
I will.
My hour is almost come when I, through suffering and tormenting flame, must render up my sight. Hear me not, but lend thy serious hearing to what I shall unfold.
Speak. I am bound to hear.
So art thou to revenge when thou shalt hear.
What?
I am thy father's spirit, doomed for a certain term to walk the night. And for the day, confined to fasting fire, till the foul crimes done in my days of nature are burnt and purged away. List, list, oh, list. If thou didst ever thy dear father love.
Oh, God!
Revenge is foul and most unnatural murder.
Murder?
Murder, most. But this most foul, strange, and unnatural.
Haste me to know it. that I with wings as swift as meditation or the thoughts of love may sweep to my revenge.
Now, Hamlet, here, sleeping within my altar, my custom always of the afternoon, upon my secure hour, my uncle's soul, with juice of cursed heaven and in a vial, and in the portions of mine ear, did pour the leprous bitumen, whose effect holds such an enmity with blood of man, that with a sudden bitter, it doth quench the thin and wholesome blood. So did it mine. Thus was I, sleeping, by a brother's hand, of life, of crown, of queen, at once dispatched.
Horrible, oh, horrible, most horrible.
If thou hast nature in thee, bear it not. Let not the royal bed of Denmark be a couch for luxury and damned incest. Prepare thee well at once. The glowworm shows the matin to be near, and him to pale his ineffectual fire. Adieu, adieu, Hamlet, remember me.
Remember me, by thy poor ghost. Thy memory holds a seat to this distracted glow.
Welcome, dear Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Moreover, that we much did long to see you, the need we have to use you did provoke our hasty sending. Something have you heard of Hamlet's transformation? What it should be, more than his father's death that thus hath put him so much from the understanding of himself, I cannot dream of. I entreat you both, that being of so young days brought up with him, that you vouchsafe your rest here in our court some little time. So, by your companies, to draw him on to pleasures, and to gather whether aught to us unknown afflicts him thus, that opened lies within our ready.
Good gentleman, he much hath talked of you, and sure I am two men there are not living to whom he more adheres.
We here give up ourselves in the full bent to lay our service freely at your feet to be commanded.
Thanks, Guildenstern, and gentle Rosencrantz. And I beseech you instantly to visit my too much changed son. Go, some of you, and bring these gentlemen where Hamlet is.
The heavens make our presence and our practices pleasant and helpful to him.
Aye. Amen.
My liege, madam.
Now, what says Polonius, our Lord Chamberlain? He tells me, dear Gertrude, that he hath found the head and source of all your son's distemper.
I doubt it no other than the main. His father's death, and our hasty marriage.
My liege and madam, to expostulate what majesty should be, what duty is, why day is day, night night, and time is time, were nothing but to waste night, day, and time. Therefore, since brevity is the soul of wit, I will be brief. Your noble son is mad. Mad call I it, for to define true madness, what is to be nothing else but mad. But let that go.
More matter, with less art.
Madam, I swear I use no art at all. That he is mad, 'tis true. 'Tis true, 'tis pity, and pity 'tis true. And now remains that we may find out the cause of this effect, or rather say, the cause of this defect.
How may we try it further?
You know, sometimes he walks 4 hours together here in the lobby.
So he does indeed. And look, where sadly the poor wretch comes reading.
Away, I do beseech you, both away. I'll board him presently. Oh, give me leave. How does my good lord Hamlet?
Well, God of mercy.
Do you know me, my lord?
Excellent well, you're a fishmonger.
Not I, my lord.
Then I would you were so honest a man.
Honest, my lord?
Aye, sir, to be honest as this world goes, it's to be one man picked out of 10,000.
What do you read, my lord?
Words, words, words.
What is the matter, my lord?
We know.
I mean the matter that you read, my lord.
Slander, sir. The satirical rogue says here that old men have gray beards, that their faces are wrinkled, their eyes purging, thick amber and plum tree gum, and that they have a plentiful lack of wit together with most weak hands.
Though this be madness, yet there is method in it. Will you walk out of the air, my lord?
Aye, into my grave.
Indeed, that is out of the air.
How pregnant sometimes his replies are.
My honorable lord, I will most humbly take my leave of you.
You cannot, sir, take from me anything that I will more willingly part with all. Except my life. Except my life.
Fare you well, my lord.
These tedious
You go to seek the Lord Hamlet. There he is.
God save you, sir.
My hard lord.
Oh, my.
My most dear lord.
Good friend. How dost thou, Guildenstern? Ah, Rosencrantz, what makes you at Elsinore?
To visit you, my lord. No other occasion.
Beggar that I am, I'm even poor in thanks. But I thank you. Are you not sent for? Is it your own inclining? Is it a free visitation? Come, deal justly with me. Come. Come. I may speak.
What should we say, my lord?
Well, anything but the purpose. I know the good king and queen have sent for you.
To what end, my lord?
That you must teach me. Or by the right of our fellowship, be even and direct with me, whether you were sent for or no.
My lord, we were sent for.
I will tell you why. So shall my anticipation prevent your discovery and your secrecy to the king and queen moult no feather I have of late. But wherefore I know not, lost all my mirth, forgone all custom of exercises, and indeed it goes so heavily with my disposition that this goodly frame, the earth, seems to me a sterile promontory, this most excellent canopy, the air. Look you, this brave o'erhanging firmament, this majestical roof, fretted with golden fire, why, it appears no other thing to me than a foul and pestilent congregation of vapors. Oh, what a piece of work is man. How noble in reason, how infinite in faculty, in form and moving, how express and admirable. In action, how like an angel. In apprehension, how like a god. The beauty of the world, the paragon of animals. And yet, to me, what is this quintessence of dust? Man delights not me. No, nor woman neither, though by your smiling you seem to say so.
Oh, my lord, there was no such stuff in my thought.
Why did you laugh then when I said man delights not me?
To think, my lord, if you delight not man, what Lenten entertainment the players shall receive from you. We coated them on the way, and hither are they coming to offer you services.
He that plays the king shall be welcome. His majesty shall have tribute of me.
There are the players.
Ah, your hands then. Come, you're welcome. But my uncle, father, and aunt, mother are deceived.
In what, my dear lord?
I am but mad north-northwest. When wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a handsaw.
Well be with you, gentlemen.
Mark you, Guildenstern, and you too, Rosencrantz. That great baby you see there is not yet out of his swaddling clout. You will profit by coming to tell you the bear's market.
My lord, I have news to tell you.
My lord, I have news to tell you. When Rochus was an actor...
Oh, the actors are come hither, my lord.
The best
actors in the world, either for tragedy, comedy, history, pastoral, pastoral, comical, historical, pastoral, tragical, historical, tragical, comical, historical, pastoral, scene, indivisible, or poem unlimited.
You are welcome, master. I am glad to see thee well. Come, come, we'll have a speech straight. Give us a taste of your quality. Come. A passionate speech.
What speech, my lord?
I heard thee speak me a speech once, but it was never acted, or if it was, not above once. The play I remember pleased not the million. It was caviar to the general. One speech in it I chiefly loved. It was Aeneas' Tales of Dido. It's live in your memory. Begin at this line and see. See, the rugged Pyrrhus, like the Hyrcanian beast. And it begins with Pyrrhus, the rugged Pyrrhus, he whose sable arms, so proceed.
The rugged Pyrrhus, he whose sable arms, black as his purpose, did the night resemble, when he lay couched in the ominous horse, hath now his this dread and black complexion smear, with heraldry more dismal.
Say on, come to Hecuba.
But who, oh, who hath seen the Moblet Queen?
The Moblet Queen.
That's good, Moblet Queen is good.
Run barefoot up and down, a clout upon that head, where late the diadem stood, and for a robe a blanket in the alarm of fear caught up. But if the gods themselves did see her, then when she saw Pyrrhus make malicious sport in mincing with his sword her husband's limbs, the instant burst of clamor that she made would have made milch the burning eyes of heaven and passion in the gods.
Look whether he has not turned his color and has tears in his eyes. Pray you, no more.
That is well. I'll have thee speak out the rest soon. Good, my lord, will you see the players well bestowed?
Come, sir.
Follow him, friend. We'll hear a play tomorrow.
Now I'm alone. Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I. Is it not monstrous? With this player here, but in a fiction, in a dream of passion, could force his soul so to his own conceit that from her working all his visage wand, tears in his eyes, distraction in defect, a broken voice and his whole function suiting with form to his conceit. For nothing. For Hecuba.
What's Hecuba to him, or he to Hecuba, that he should weep for? What would he do had he the motive and the cue for passion that I have? He would drown the stage with tears and cleave the general ear with horrid speech. Yet I, a dull and muddy metaled rascal, peak like John O'Green, unpregnant of my cause, and can say nothing. No, not for a king, upon whose property and most dear life a damned deceit was made. Am I a coward? Who calls me villain, breaks me pate across, plucks off my beard and blows it in my face, tweaks me by the nose, gives me the lion throat as deep as the lungs? Who does me this, huh? Zounds, I should take it, for it cannot be that I am pigeon-livered and lack gall to make oppression bitter. For ere this, I should have batted all the region kites with the slaves. Bloody body villain. Remorseless, treacherous, lecherous, kindless villain. Oh, vengeance! Why, what a gnash. This is most brave that I, the son of a dear father murdered, prompted to my revenge by heaven and hell, must like a bawd unpack my heart with words and fall a-cursing like a very crab. Scullion, fly upon the fly. About my brain. I have heard that guilty creatures sitting at a play have by the very cunning of the scene been struck so to the soul that presently they have proclaimed their malefactions. I'll have these players play something like the murder of my father before my uncle. I'll observe his looks. I'll tent him to the quick. If he but blench, I know my course. The spirit I have seen may be the devil, and the devil hath power to assume a pleasing shape, yea, and perhaps out of my weakness and my melancholy. He is very potent with such spirits. But who uses me to damn me? I'll have grounds more relative than this. The play's the thing, wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king.
You have just heard a condensed version of William Shakespeare's Hamlet. The cast included this evening the king, played by Alexander Scourby, the queen by Rosamund Pinchot, Polonius by Egerton Paul, Horatio by Sidney Smith, The Ghost by George Gall, Bernardo by Hiram Sherman. This program was arranged and directed by Orson Welles. Irving Reese directed the radio effects.
The Columbia Workshop would appreciate your comments on this production. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.